Yes.
Is this a good time to do it?
We can give it a shot.
Okay. It'd take probably, I don't know, 20 minutes or so. And
okay.
I'll ask you 10 or 12 questions and just answer as long or short as you want to, please. And
gotcha.
If you don't want to answer, don't answer.
Okay.
First, let me tell you one thing some guys don't seem to care for, other guys love it. When this appears, you'll get a tremendous increase in the number of autograph requests you get for a period of a few weeks.
That's no problem.
Okay, great. Most of them feel that way, but every once in a while somebody doesn't like the idea.
Right.
Where'd you get the nickname?
It's from a friend of the family's. His name was Dool, D-O-O-L, and my mom and dad just added the E-Y.
Okay, you had it since you were a little guy then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was a little kid, and I went through school. It sounded crazy, Brent, but I went through school as Horace. And that was, and on the baseball field, it was Dooley, and the basketball court.
Okay. So you were two different people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
In my senior year in high school, I started putting Dooley Womack on my, when I was being introduced in class, or as the teacher was going around, and when she got to my name, she said, we've got an alias in the class. And which I thought was real funny, and but anyway, people never did put it together. In fact, now when people run across me and they recognize me, which not many people do, they say Horace, and I know good and well they haven't seen me in 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, the name, you know, when you first came up, well, we're relatively the same vintage. You're about 2 years older than I am. You were Dooley Womack then, and I assumed your name was Dooley Womack, and goodness, I don't know when it was that I realized that that was not your name, and I suspect there's an awful lot of people out there that don't know that.
Right. Well, it's a lot of people, even to this day, don't put it together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I tell people, just don't forget to call me when it's time to eat.
Yeah, that's the main thing in for your payday, right? Were you signed by the Yankees originally?
Yes.
Okay. Was it were you scouted? Was it a, would you try go to a tryout camp? How did they come across
well,
you?
Well, it was real strange. I was 9-0 my senior year in high school, and my earned run average was less than one, and Johnny Newen, who was chief of scouts for the Yankees, VP and chief of scouts.
The old first baseman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He, I got a call from one of the coaches over in Columbia and said, Dooley, you need to come out here quick. Johnny Newen of the Yankees is here, and I'd like for you to work out with him or for him. So I did. I hustled out there, and I threw, and I warmed up the mound. In front of the mound, on the mound, and went beyond the mound and continued to throw. And he said, why are you doing that? And I said, well, whenever I get up to the mound, home plate looks shorter and I feel like I can throw harder. He said, logical. So I went on and I worked out for him, and he asked me, was I playing ball anywhere? And I said, I'm playing in the Dutch Fork League for a team called Lexington. He said, I will have our scout keep a watch on you and all. Well, I played that summer, and I was 5-0, and I was pitching a game a week and catching the other. And I had games like where I shut out the other team. I struck out 18 one game. I was hitting the ball well, and then one night he came to a game where I was won like 15-13, and after the game he said, I'd like to sign you, and I said, and the scout was Ted Petoskey at that time.
How do you spell it?
And,
How do you spell that?
Oh, P-E-T-O-S-K-Y.
Okay, thank you.
And I, it just blew my mind because I said, how could you do that when I you know, I had 18 strikeouts in one game, shut out the team the other games. I just don't understand where you're coming from. He said, Dooley, I had to see what your stick-to-itiveness was.
Oh, great.
In other words, I wanted to see if you would stick with the game and whether you won, lost, or whatever. So anyway, that's when I signed.
Okay, and they sent you, wait a minute, I've got it right here.
Florida State League.
Right, okay, yeah, St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. You were a starting pitcher. You did well, but over a period of about 6 or 7 years, they gradually started you less and put you more in relief. It was not a sudden change. It was a gradual progression.
Yes.
What did you think about that?
Well, to get to play ball, I would do whatever it took, you know, to play and also to help the team.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yankees were always good to me. It seemed like they would call me in and talk to me every year and just tell me that, Dooley, you keep your nose clean, you stay out of trouble, but you got to come up with that one pitch to help you get to the big leagues and all. I tried a knuckleball. I tried breaking balls. You know, you try just about everything. And then a batting instructor by the name of Wally Moses, who just passed away not long ago.
Great ball player.
Yes. He told me one day, and he and his wife met my fiance before we got married, and me, and said, you know, they liked us so well. And he just told me one day, he said, Dooley, now the language I'm getting ready to use is going to be a little bit rough. He said, Dooley, he said, you need to pack your fucking bags and go home because you're too damn hard-headed to listen. Said, if you don't make some changes, you know, just go home.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Wally, and I almost cried because it really hurt. You know, that's the first time somebody really just, hey, do it. So to make a long story short, I told him, I said, what do we need to do? He said, step a little bit and throw across your body. And that's what I did, and all of a sudden the ball sank.
I'll be darned.
And when the ball sank, you know, I started pitching and winning games. And, in fact, Doc Edwards came down. This was in AAA. Doc Edwards came down from the big club, and he told me, he warmed me up that night in the bullpen. He said, Dooley, he said, you know what? He said, you throw just like Stottlemyre. Your ball reacts like it. Your breaking ball's the same. He said, it's just unbelievable. And I don't understand why you can't win. And that was sort of like one of those situations where the confidence built, and I went like 8 games in a row. Then I proved to the Yankees that I won one game, was like 10 innings, 1-0. And the last game of the season, I went 13 innings. And got beat like it was either 3-2 or 4-3. So I showed them that, you know, I could last, regardless of being a thin person and all.
This was at Toledo?
Yes.
Okay.
And so to make a long, you know, it just, then I found out after the season was over that 3 or 4 clubs were interested in me, and then the Yankees sent me a contract. In fact, my father-in-law came to my apartment that my wife and I had here in Irmo and said, have you read this morning's paper? And I said, no. And he said, then you haven't heard. And I said, heard what? He said, you've been added to the 40th man on the roster for the Yankees. And, you know, that was a dream come true,
the
start of a dream come true.
Yeah, I bet that was a great feeling.
Oh, it was.
Well, even then, though, even on the 40-man roster, you were not really highly regarded or expected to make the team.
Right. When I arrived in spring training, the first guy I went to was Jake Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, see, he had started out at Toledo, and then he went up to the Yankees. And he told me, he said, Dooley, said, I want you to know one thing. You can make this ball club. You have to get out there and bust your fanny. And I mean bust your fanny hard. And you can make this team. But if you don't, you're going back to Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll give you an extra incentive. Since I'm going to be catching, I'll give you this McGregor's, this new McGregor glove if you make the team. So, you know, I couldn't afford to buy a lot of equipment. So,
and often you couldn't refuse, huh?
That's right.
Well, you made it, and you really made it. You were one of the top relievers in the league their first 2 years, anyhow. You were their second year. There was probably not two guys better out of the bullpen than you were,
mm-hmm.
if there were that. When did you start having your rotator cuff problems?
Well, that happened, Brent, in 68 in spring training. I had just pitched three outs against the Mets, and all Hauk asked of a pitcher is, you've made my team, get in shape and work your... But what happened was, in 67, I had hit 291. And, in other words, they left me in ball games where they wouldn't leave a regular pitcher because of I made contact. I put the ball in play.
Right.
So I got, in a way, I got on Hauk. And, I mean, I think about it. Well, now I'm getting up of age that I don't wake up in a cold sweat, but I was scared to death. I was on the bench, and it was right at two out. No, it was the second out was made, and I was giving Hauk a hard time, and he'd already told me, he said, go on in and shower. You know, you're finished for the day. And I said, hey, Skip, let me hit. I said, I hit 291 last year. If I'd have kept my big mouth shut, because I tore the rotator cuff swinging a bat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's a freak accident, and it's nothing you can do about it. It's just, but I learned to live with it, and I took cortisone shots like you wouldn't believe, not only in New York, but Washington. Just about everywhere we went, I was being popped. You know, not knowing what it was, but knowing that every time I extended my arm to really get behind that fastball and make it sink, the shoulder just felt like it was coming apart. So it was, like I say, it was quite an experience.
Well, looking at the record book, it's pretty easy to see. You know, I suspected that was when it happened because you were a different pitcher between 67 and 68.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, I was 0-5 so fast in 68, it was just unbelievable. Hauk called me in and he said, Dooley, I know something's wrong. Your fastball, and you know how you put your hands out 4 to 6 inches? He said, it's that much slower.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you don't have the movement on it and everything. And at the time, I was trying to make the transition of being a breaking ball pitcher because that took the pressure off my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it was, you know, and I just hated to, I was one of those guys that back then we didn't come out and say, I hurt, I've got a problem. Back then, it was a case of you just went out there, and if you hurt, you pitched.
Mm-hmm. Now you get a hang. Now you get 60 days to get over it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's, I mean, it's such a different, and another thing I did wrong. See, I came home and had my own arm operated on.
Instead
of going to the ball club and saying, look, because I was finished at like 31, and... you know, I could have gotten, what is it, Job or one of those that are well-renowned. and said, okay, I got a problem in the shoulder. You know, can you, because I'm one of these guys, I can take pain, or I did take pain, because my arm throbbed like a toothache for 4 years.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I finished up 71, and that's when I came home, and I talked to Dr. Lunsford here in Columbia, who is a, was, I mean, he died in a plane crash back a few years back in Tennessee. They were coming back from a basketball game. Anyway, I talked to him, and he said, Dooley, he would put you under a knife in a bat of an eye. So I went in on a Tuesday. He gave me, I called him on Monday. I went in on Tuesday, picked up my papers. Wednesday, he operated on me. Told me the next morning it took, they just said Leo DeRocha died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's on the news right now.
Oh, what a shame.
Anyway, he told me, he said it took 8 stitches to sew it up. So he said, I don't know how in the hell you threw a baseball. But he said, all I can relate it to is an athlete teaches his body, the muscles, to pick up that injured muscle and run with it. So, but I never threw a ball after that.
That was 71?
That was, well, actually, February of 72. I was hoping that to go back and play. I was in the athletics chain at that point.
Where had you pitched in 71, or I guess most of 70 probably?
Okay, 71, I was in Des Moines, Iowa. I had gone to spring training with their the AAA club,
mm-hmm.
and I had had words with Charlie Finley. And
that was easy.
I told him that I said, how can you trade for me? And I go to the big club, and I'm only there for 38 days, and then you not even give me an opportunity to try out with the big league club the next year. I said, you personally said you gave too much for me for you to give me my release and let me negotiate with another team, but yet you can't see well enough of me to afford me to come to spring training. So I just can't understand some logic sometimes. And, of course, now the older I get, you know, the old saying is hindsight's like 20/20.
Oh, yes.
But he was just a different owner. I mean, I haven't run into Steinbrenner, so I really can't.
Saying he's a different owner is nice. I've heard it expressed very differently. What about it now? Is the shoulder all right now?
No. In fact, I had an arthrogram 3 years ago and right along now. And the doctor said, you don't have a rotocuff.
So,
but it's not throbbing. I can move my shoulder, and you can hear it clicking and all that bunch of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't ache. And when I don't have any pain, you know, I say, to me, it ain't broke, so I'm not going to go fix it. The doctor tried to talk me into getting it repaired, and I said, I'm not planning to go throw the baseball anymore. I'm not planning to do anything, just you know, coach, where I don't have to put the body in that kind of strain and so forth. But the arthrogram showed up that I do not have it. I do not have a rotator cuff in the right shoulder anymore.
I'll be darned. Well, I guess the main thing is the pain, or the lack of pain.
That's it, because I went 4 years with it. I mean, if I pitched, Brent, that night it throbbed. I mean, you know, there was just no sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 30 days before I had it repaired, I didn't sleep at all. I had friends that would come to me and say, Dooley, I'm a friend. And I'd say, sure. They said, are you on drugs? Because I had the black lines under my eyes.
Yeah.
And my wife thinks I'm crazy because I won't even take aspirin. And that's the way I am. I didn't care for drugs. Even to now, I just I refuse to take it because aspirin, because I say if I tell everybody, I said, look, if I die, I want an autopsy. My wife got rid of me. And she fusses at me. She, I don't know why you say that.
You talk her into it if you say it enough.
That's right.
Well, let's go back to your rookie year. You made a start.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Yeah, and you didn't exactly set the world on fire.
No, and I can tell you why. If I had it to do over again, I'd do everything completely different. What I did was, Hauk told me the day before that I was going to start. Well, what happened was, I told the wife that night, I said, I want you to wake me up in the morning. I want you to make me grits, eggs, a big slab of ham, and I'm going to go back to bed. And I did. I got up, ate that big breakfast, crawled back in bed, slept another hour or two, got up. She had me a big 16-ounce T-bone, medium rare, baked potato, you know, everything that you'd want, a salad, and I ate that, and I laid back down, and when I went to the ballpark, I was rested.
I bet you were.
I felt so good, except when I threw the ball, it looked like it was coming back to me a heck of a lot faster than I was throwing it.
I bet it was.
In fact, Jim Higgins says, what in the world? Says, you look like you're working hard, but the ball, there's nothing on it. And so, you know, when you warm up, things happen, and then you hope when you go on the field that they do change. Well, they didn't. And, in fact, Whitey summed it up afterwards in the clubhouse. He said, Dooley, he said, when you jammed Ed Brinkman, and he was one of the weakest hitters in the American League.
Sure was.
And for him to dump the ball over shortstop for a double, he said, I knew you were in trouble. But I gave up nine hits and five runs, two home runs, within that three-inning period.
I figured it out, and I don't have it, but I think your earned run average was 264 for the year, but I think it was like 240 when you take out the start. So it cost you a quarter of a run a game, I think, on the season.
Yeah. I had even Bobby Richardson was writing an article for the state paper back here in Columbia, and see, he had asked me before that my thoughts. And baseball is a psychological game.
Oh, yes.
I mean, physically, you get in condition, but then everything gets to be mental afterwards. And I psyched myself out of that. I just, I let what I should have done was gotten up that morning and eaten that big breakfast, but then eat lightly, move around, maybe go work up a sweat. Then go out to the ballpark, and I would have been ready. And I do feel that the way I pitched, like in AAA ball, it's no different. You pitch the same way. You try to stay away from that mistake, because in the big leagues, you make the mistake, they kill you. If they foul that ball back, you say, whew, thank goodness. Because I tell people now, it's easier to pitch in the big leagues because if your control is good, you pitch a good game. If it's bad or erratic, get me out of here quick before they kill me.
Yeah, and they'll get you out of somebody else's.
The conditions up there. When you got a cleat bore, you're at third base, and I know we went through my rookie year, we had Ruben Amaro, and then we did some shifting around. Bobby Richardson at second, Pepitone at first. I probably had some of the best infielders. It's like I tell people, I used to throw the sinker down and into right-handed hitters. Well, Cleet in Boston taught me something one night. It was early in the season. He told me to throw the blankety, I mean, he's yelling these curse words, throw the blankety blank over the blankety blank plate and let the blankety blank hit the blankety blank ball at me. And I said, I looked at him and I said, okay. I threw a sinker down and in, and the guy hits a shot at it. He picks it clean, throws him out. I said, you know, that wasn't too hard. I threw another one down and in. Guy hits a shot. I mean, this is only a couple of pitches. Hits a shot at him. He picks it clean. He throws him out. And I said, you know, I'm just about becoming a believer. I threw a sinker that went off the table. Occasionally you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy topped it. And I saw on the second bounce on the grass, I said, oh, Lord, this one's going to take his head off. Well, what happened is he caught the ball behind his head, threw the guy out.
Oh, my goodness.
I walked off the field and said, I'm a believer. I pitched four innings that night. I only gave up one hit. And that was Carl Yastrzemski when the umpire called a strike a ball because of who he was and who I was.
Yeah.
And I threw him the pitch again because Elston had some words with the umpire, and I threw the same pitch. He got a ground ball single in the hole at first.
You remember who the umpire was?
No.
Okay.
Oh, but I remember. Now, you mentioned umpire, and that brings to Cal Drummond.
Uh-huh.
He, one night, we're in the Yankee Stadium, and I come in to pitch, and I'm trying to remember who we were playing. I don't even remember who we were playing against. All I remember is I threw the ball down the middle of the plate, ball one, and I flinched. And Elston, I could see him back there talking to the umpire. Well, I didn't say anything. The next pitch was even better. Ball two. Now I'm getting upset, and I think I might have yelled something. Okay, next pitch, ball three. I mean, excellent. I mean, anyway, Elston Howard comes running out there because I traipse around the mound. I'm throwing the rosin bag. I'm infuriated. Anyway, Elston Howard comes out there and says, hey, man, this guy's ready to throw your ass out of the ball game. And I said, hey, I'm a rookie. Those are hell of a pitches. And he's making it to the point to where he's making it tougher on me. He said, Dooley, he's testing you. He said that. I said, damn, I'm a rookie. You don't test a rookie. So anyway, the next pitch, ball four, he goes down to first. The next guy comes up. I throw the pitch down the middle. He hits a ground ball double play. We get out of the inning. So anyway, we come in the dugout, and boy, Ralph Houck jumps me. I mean, he let me have it right quick, and Elston came to my saving grace. He said, wait a minute, Major. He said, Dooley has been throwing hell of a pitches. He said, he's testing him. And Houck got on Drummond unmercifully after that. So, and, you know, God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore. So.
Did he change? Did he start giving you some pitches?
Oh, well, after that, yeah, I didn't have any problems with him. I mean, and the thing I used to love was to watch the umpires. If you're around the plate, to watch them take it 2 and 3 inches off the plate, like they're doing now. I watch a lot of games on TV, and you can see why the hitters get highly upset because the ball will come in and maybe come around the plate, but it's where they catch it.
That's right. And a good catcher can sure get you an awful lot of those.
They can frame that ball so pretty now. And, oh, yes, they can get you out of a lot of jams. And plus his talking to the umpire. You know, he can get a lot out of the umpire, which I think Elston Howard played the umpires to the hilt.
Yes, from what I understand, he was marvelous at it.
Oh, he was. He was.
And a big guy, and umpire a lot of times probably had to take his word for it.
Well, he took me under his wing. I forget if it was my rookie year or right before he got traded my second year. He told me in Boston, he said, Dooley, he said, you better get every penny you can. I think I'd just gone 3 or 4 innings that night. He said, they're going to use you long relief, middle relief, short relief. You're going to be warming up every day. He said, for goodness sakes, get everything you can. And he said, because, you know, life's going to be short-lived here.
Well, they sure did use you. You tied the, or either set or tied the Yankee team record for games your second year.
Yeah. Well, Hal had planned me to break it. He had set it up, and he told me, he said, Dooley, he said, I think I was somewhere around 62 or 3, and he told, I mean, he planned it out. He said, I will have you in these games. Well, the next to the last day, I'm trying to think of the, Fred Talbert went in at about the first or second inning, and he really had one heck of a relief stint going. And, I mean, like, he shut out, I think, Oakland. And what he did was, in the ninth inning, Hauk had me up warming up. But the call never came because Fred was sitting them up, sitting them down. And anyway, when the game ended, Hauk called me into his office, and he told me, he said, Dooley, he said, I just wanted to let you know the reason I didn't call you in. And I said, you don't have to say. I understand. I said, Fred is on a salary drive or hoping to be able to stay with the ball club the next year. And, you know, when a guy's got it, for goodness sakes, don't take him out.
Yeah, that's right.
Leave him in there. I mean, I like the way they got it now. The designated hitter. Man, if a guy's got it, and he's one run down, heck, he can stay in there and pitch all night.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, it was a case of you had to hit for yourself. So anyway, he said, well, you will be in there tomorrow. And sure enough, the next day I was in. And in fact, my the last hit I got that year, I drove in two runs.
That's a good way to go.
Oh, yeah. Finished the season with the two runs and then head for home.
You were, you know, you mentioned it, but you were a pretty good, pretty decent hitter, over 200 average, 226 for your career.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Well, they used to, they would bunt me